Hello, hello everybody, and welcome to this episode of Causes or Cures. I'm Dr. Eeks, your host. Thanks so much for joining in. Hope all is well in your world. Hopefully my apartment complex and the ambient noise of the city will cooperate today. So I don't really have anything new to report. Somebody told me to, you know, say things that are going on in my life. If you're interested in some of my writings, public health musings, and otherwise, you can check out my blog at bloomingwellness.com. I just wrote a blog about credentialism. Credentialism. So stupid. I started with a joke. I wrote about Jesus meeting credentialism, and Jesus is saying, I cured men with leprosy, I cured a man's blindness, made a man walk, and raised a few people from the dead. And the crowd goes, yes, but what are your credentials? And they were all scientists and researchers and people of influence with blue check marks in the land of Twitnom. Okay, I jest. What else? But there are experts off of Twitter, you know, just so you guys know. Talk to those people too. So I saw a play. My mother, she told me, get out more so I don't get dementia. I guess she must have read an article or something. I'm still a little young for it, but who knows? It seems earlier onset is a growing trend, right? Just had a doctor come on and talk about early onset cancer. But hey, it could happen with dementia too. So I went to the Irish Theater here in New York City, a theater I absolutely love. If you come to New York, go to the Irish Theater. It's really good. I saw a play called Chester Bailey. Got really great reviews. It was during World War II, not really about the war. But Chester, he doesn't serve for some reason. I don't know exactly why, but he is questioning his self-worth because he sees all these guys around him in uniform and they're serving. And then, you know, he has an accident at work, big accident, cost him his eyes and his hands, but he has a terrific imagination. So while he's in the hospital, he believes he still has his hands and his eyes, and he tells the doctor the things he sees. Then his parents die of grief because Chester's in rough shape. He's put in a mental hospital because he thinks he has eyes and hands and he doesn't. And he's sexually assaulted there by another man, but he believes it's this woman who he has seen once and he's in love with her, or so he tells himself he is. And then some doctor who is tasked with covering up the assault actually helps Chester stay delusional. So, all in all, a happy ending for an Irish play. If you see a lot of Irish plays, you'll get that. All right, guys, enough about me. On to the topic of the day. My guest today is Dr. Borja Del Pozo Cruz, a senior researcher in health who focuses on aging, lifestyle, population health, basically. He and his colleagues recently published a paper in JAMA Internal Medicine titled Prospective Associations of Daily Step Counts and Intensity with Cancer and Cardiovascular Disease Incidence and Mortality and All-Cause Mortality. Basically, is there a magic number of steps we should be taking to optimize our health? He'll talk about how he did the study, the association of steps counted and intensity of steps with new cases of cancer and cardiovascular disease. Also, how number of steps are linked to cancer and cardiovascular deaths and all-cause mortality. He'll explain what that term means too, because I have a feeling some of you guys have heard it quite a bit during the pandemic, but you're not, maybe you don't know exactly what it is. He'll talk about how many steps we should be taking before the Queen. Sorry, I just had to throw that in there. Couldn't say that without that. Anyways, he'll talk about how many steps we should be taking and at what cadence and the broader public health implications of his study. All right. And by the way, a listener wrote me and asked me to do a podcast on number of steps. So this one is for you and for anyone else who's listening. Okay, guys, 1 second while I connect to Dr. Borja Del Pozo Cruz. Guys, we are connecting with Dr. Cruz, and we are going to talk about a cool study he did on basically how many steps we should be doing or make a difference in terms of health outcomes. And we'll dive into that a little more. But thank you so much, Dr. Cruz, for being here. And Before we dive into the paper, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Borja del Pozo. So I work for I've got two affiliations. So I'm still affiliated with the Southern Denmark University in Denmark, where this study was conducted, or where the analysis were done. But now I moved to Spain to the University of Cadiz, where I'm a senior research fellow in health sciences, and basically my research is about lifestyle and how can engaging in sort of a good or optimal lifestyle can improve your health essentially and well-being.
So you're in Spain.
Right now, yes.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yeah. I've been in many places actually. So been in Australia, New Zealand, Denmark, Portugal, and now back into my home country, which is Spain.
Spain. I've never been there. That's like next on one of my one of my top three for traveling.
Nice, you should.
Yeah, I've only
Yeah.
heard good things, so hopefully just have to get time off from work and someone to watch the dog, and it's good. How did you get interested in this idea of, how many steps someone takes or the intensity of the steps significantly matters?
Yeah, well, I mean, I myself, I'm very interested in physical activity in general. So that's my sort of my background in terms of studies of physical activity and health. And, we know that physical activity works, and there are currently guidelines stating that you have to, we should be doing, all of us adults and older adults should be doing 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity. Now, for the layperson, for the general population, that pretty much equates to exercise. And some people might get intimidated by the word exercise or moderate to vigorous intensity, physical activity, right? So we came up with this idea in order to, to translate into walking behavior steps, which is something that everyone sort of understands, these guidelines for health. And so that was essentially the idea. So how can we, translate the guidelines into number of steps and intensity of stepping, so that people can, engage better and understand better what they are doing and relate better with the activity that they are doing.
Now, this study, if I read correctly, was the largest population sample, an analysis of adults using an accelerometer. I knew I was going to mess up that word.
Yeah.
The thing that you wear to track the steps that you take.
Exactly. Yeah, an accelerometer. So
Accelerometer. Okay.
that yeah, exactly. That's essentially like a small device. In this case, these devices were research grade, so they were made for research purposes, essentially. That's what, that's a meaning of research grade instead of consumer grade, which are the Fitbits or, Apple Watch. That they're accurate, but we don't know exactly what's going on inside, the algorithms and how they calculate things, et cetera. But that's another discussion, I suppose. So essentially, small devices that people were wearing on their wrist, and those devices were tracked, like essentially all movement that they were doing, both in terms of time and intensity for 7 consecutive days and night. So we were able to track sleep as well. That wasn't part of this study. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get into the methods section. But what did we, I was a little curious about what we knew, like what did you guys know before you began the study? And then you talk a lot about the what is it? Purposeful steps versus incidental steps. And could you just explain what those are to folks?
Yeah, so okay, so to answer your first question, what was known before these studies? Because there's two studies that were published, one in JAMA Internal Medicine and one in JAMA Neurology, on different health outcomes. But so we knew very little in terms of steps and health outcomes. So there were a couple of papers on, sort of trying to figure out how many steps per day a person should be doing if they wanted to reduce the risk of mortality. But mortality is a very, like, for all causes, right? That's a very hard, like, ultimate outcome. So we want to know some more proximal outcomes. So what happened with your cardiovascular disease? What happened with your cancer? Can we prevent cancer by doing more steps? And if so, you know, how many? Other sort of questions or research questions that we wanted to answer were, you know, how about dementia, which is very prevalent these days, you know, cognitive, et cetera. So we need very little, and we need very little, not only in terms of number of steps per day needed to, you know, improve your health, but also, you know, how intense those the steps needed to be in order to optimize the stepping activity, walking activity. So sorry, if you let me, I'm gonna yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
So yes, I was shutting down the WhatsApp because otherwise it's gonna
No
be
worries. Mine'll go off in a second too, so don't worry.
So yeah, I mean, there were a lot of aspects of stepping for health, if we want to call that way, that were unknown for us.
Okay. Now, you looked at the association of daily step counts and step intensity with cancer and cardiovascular disease incidence, which means new cases, right?
Exactly.
And
Onset
then,
of these
right,
cases, yeah.
incidence, and then all-cause mortality, as well as cancer and cardiovascular disease related mortality among UK adults. Can you just briefly, I know there's a lot involved in the methods section of any study, but can you summarize how you did that? And then, as can you also, because a lot of people today hear the word all cause mortality, especially, you know, with COVID-19. And I was wondering if you could just explain that in kind of like plain language to people what that means.
Yeah, so I mean, what we did essentially was, you know, we were able to extract, well, we applied some, I would say, some, you know, complex machine learning algorithm to be able to extract the walking behavior from these small devices that were attached to the wrist. So people were, you know, doing different activities. We isolated the activities to do with walking behavior. And then from there, we were able to quantify by applying another set of algorithms. We were able to quantify the number of steps and the intensity of those steps. With that information, and also with the access that we were granted to, you know, people's hospital records and GP records and National Death Index records, we were able to extract these outcomes that you have mentioned. So, you know, when someone could have the first episode of CVD, so cardiovascular disease or cancer, on or when and why they died. So the all-cause mortality, continuing with your question, so the all-cause mortality essentially refers to any, you know, cause of mortality. That this could be cancer, CVD, could be diabetes, it could be stroke, it could be anything, right? So they die, we recorded whether they die or not. So that would be, you know, 1-0.
Right.
Doesn't matter the cause. And then for the specific cause, you know, we would record if they die because of cardiovascular disease or cancer. So that would be the difference. And then so with this information, we were able to you know, correlate these two behaviors, or what? Sorry, correlate walking with the outcome, and by applying some statistical modeling, we were
Sure.
able to you know, to say, okay, so this could be the optimal dose of steps or the intensity.
And it was they wore the monitor for 7 days, but they needed
Yeah.
like but they ha they needed the 3 days of act of like good activity or something like that to be included.
Yeah, so because when you wear, like, you know, imagine that you're wearing you know, a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or,
Yeah.
you know, any other activity tracker for 1 day, you know, that 1 day might not be reflective of your habitual sort of physical activities. That is why we needed more than, in this case, according to, you know, different standards, you need like 3 days, 3 good days of recording activity. in
And this
order to
might,
say what we
sure,
do.
this might be a stupid question, but I was thinking about this. The type of steps someone takes. You only looked at walking, you didn't look at like running or,
No,
okay.
we as I said before, we isolated walking from other types of activities. So we were able to isolate, and that's a big novelty of this study, because other studies, they simply translated all movement from all type of activities, including running, into steps. But we were, interested and very interested only on steps while walking. So that's a major novelty, and I think an important one, because then we can actually say, if you walk at this intensity or this number of steps, rather than saying, well, you can actually run. Of course, if you run this more intensity in bulk, that's kind of for active people, for sporty sort of people.
Yes, I run. I also skip. So I don't know how I would. I do. I started skipping as part of my workout. And people think you look crazy, but I like mixing
Actually,
it up
very
with.
good for
I think it makes you happier, and I mix it up with my running. Anyways, I digress there a little bit, but okay. So you're. What did you guys? So we kind of just talked through the method section. What did you guys find when looking at number of steps per day and the different kinds of mortality, all-cause mortality, cancer mortality, and then cardiovascular disease mortality?
So what we found essentially is that, and this is probably common for, this was common for all outcomes that we looked at, both like incidence of disease and mortality, any of the mortality outcomes. So the first interesting and important thing is that, any number of a step could count towards a better health, so less risk of all-cause CVD or cancer mortality, or even like CVD or cancer incidence. And that's important. So you gain sort of benefits from, very little. And of course, that risk reduction, it's less and less as you increase your number of steps, up until what we saw was 10,000 steps a day. So that's the second sort of major finding, how many steps for optimal health? 10,000. And then beyond that point, we couldn't, I mean, some of the graphs might appear that the risk actually increased, but that doesn't, that is not the, that's not like that per se. So beyond that point, we couldn't actually infer anything meaningful, because there is this lack of data. This, not many people do more than 10,000 steps per day. There's no, many probably events, so there's a number of factors that account for that observation, for that lack of any, statistically significant observation beyond 10,000 steps. In terms of, okay, you
Well, I
go.
had a question down the line about the 10,000 steps, but now that you brought it up, I wanted to ask it now. Because everyone's well, people actually wrote to me and they wanted a podcast on number of steps they should take. So it was obvious to me that people were kind of looking for this magic number or like how many steps should we be taking? So that's what I wanted to ask you. Is 10,000 steps a day the magic number?
It could be. obviously, we need to, we need more studies, but it could be the magic number. Now, I would like to stress that, okay, so 10,000 step, we could say, is the magic number for optimal health. But doing more than yesterday and up to 10,000 is still good, right? So doing
Yes.
something is better than none. And this
Yes.
is very important. And there's two reasons why this is important. So, there might be inactive people, people that are mainly sedentary in the day-to-day. Now, we don't want those people to, one day do 10,000 steps and then the next day doing nothing. So it might be more motivating, and they might even feel less intimidated by, doing a little today, and then gradually increase the number of steps per day up until like 10,000, up till the magic number that you quote.
I know. I used the word magic. It wasn't very scientific, but
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it's the optimal, you know, set dose magic is perfectly understandable. So, you know, I would like to stress that from the, you know, participant sort of point of view, or the person point of view, but also, you know, healthcare providers, you know, they can show a graph and say, look, from the very first step, you're gaining, you know, health benefits. So it is important that you know, get out there and do something. And the other probably, you know, important point is that these 10,000 steps, they don't need to be accumulated in a, you know, afternoon stroll or, you know, morning stroll. You know, they can be accumulated throughout the day through what we call incidental physical activity, which is, you know, you're doing your house and you're tidying up your room, that's your accumulating steps. You go and, you know, to get the trash and the rubbish bin, whatever. You walk your dog, you're accumulating steps through different activities. So what we can do is organize our day-to-day, such as we try to increase, you know, by little the number of steps that we do. That's, you know, I could say those three points are very
Sure,
important.
sure. Just to, increase steps throughout your day, and that's not intimidating for people. I think everybody can do that in some way. Now, I did. It doesn't mean though, and you know, in some of the studies I read, for example, on how much exercise you should do to have an optimal immune system, which is not like exact, but there was sometimes a point of diminishing return. You know, like if you work out too hard or you know, you might have too much oxidative stress or whatever, but you didn't find that here. You don't really know, and beyond 10,000 steps, it's just sort of the area of un, right?
I mean it, and it's very difficult, even with, I mean, I don't know exactly what studies are you referring to, but it's very difficult to have, you know, a critical mass of people exercising or moving beyond certain point, you know. And so that causes problems at a statistical level. So like, I guess what I'm saying is we don't know yet. You know, it is not clear, because I mean and there's a lot of confounders. I mean, I can think of some, you know, to do with the steps, because it's our topic today, but you know, you can apply this to other contexts of physical activity. Like, you know, people doing 20,000 steps might be someone you know, in their, I don't know, 40s, 50s, doing a manual job, right? So, you know, that is that, I don't know, in a mine or something, right? I don't know, I'm inventing here, but you know, that person might be doing a lot of steps, but it's in a context of you know, of surrounded by a number of factors that are per se dangerous for, you know, their health. You know, and so there's a number of confounders. Or normally, you know, what type of people we find in those jobs, you know, it's people with low social economical backgrounds, right? So we know that these people are at increased risk of health diseases, etc. So there's a lot of confounding
Yeah, it's a great
there.
point. It's a great point.
Yeah, so that's why I couldn't go that far in terms of you know, inferring anything. I could just say what we say in the paper. It's like, we don't know. Well, yeah, that's it.
We
We
don't
need
know.
more experts. And a very, very interesting area of research, actually.
Yeah, no, especially now with you know lots of research going into you know obesity and trying to change the sedentary lifestyle and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And you didn't see any effect modification by age, is that right?
That's right. And that was we would expect, you know, such modification, but we couldn't find that in our data set. Now all the studies for, you know, smaller studies and focusing primarily on all-cause mortality, which is a, I say, is like a disaster box, you know, everything gets in there, but they found such a moderation effect. So they what they found was that, you know, all the adults might need less steps than younger adults. And if you think about it, you know, it might make sense, because you know, they are less, you know, fit probably than younger adults. And so, you know, an effort that an older person would, you know, who is less fit, that with 10,000 steps might be, might be more stressful for the body than the same effort for a younger adult. So, but
Right.
we couldn't find it, and we said so in the paper as well, and that's okay. We need more studies probably, because this is
Sure.
it, the first sort of study that don't find that effect modification.
And the age range was 40 to 79,
Yeah,
average
correct.
age 61. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't, how many, do you have any idea how long, in distance, 10,000 steps, what that translates to? I don't.
That would be 6, 7 kilometers, probably, I would say.
Really? Wow,
Oh,
okay. That's so
yeah.
that's like not small for a lot of people.
No, it's not. That's why I would say, well, it really depends on the intensity. On the intensity, so, it could be less, obviously. But yeah, I would say like 6, 7. It's sort of the
Jeez,
standard
okay.
at standard intensity. Yeah, that equates to 100 minutes per day.
The
Maybe that's
intensity
a
of the steps. Oh yeah, because
yeah.
like no one step is going to be the same size. I know that from being in the army and marching.
Correct. Correct.
You also wrote the association of a strong there was a stronger magnitude was found at peak 30 cadences.
Yes.
Can you just tell us what that means in plain language?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tricky one. So the peak 30, so essentially what it means is that, let's say that you do 100 minutes of walking, right? Of stepping. So your steps for for an hour. So the peak 30 minutes cadence means that the is your best effort, your best natural effort, which translate into what is the best 30 minutes. So, 1 minute could be at an intensity of 100 steps per minute, and another minute could be 80 steps per minute. So is the average of the 30 minutes of highest cadence, if that makes sense. So it reflects the best effort of a person, essentially,
Okay, okay.
the 30 fastest minutes, if you want. That might be
30 fastest. Okay. No, that makes
yeah,
sense. That makes sense.
but it's individual, so it's not the same. So those 30 minutes, so the average of a speed of those 30 minutes is different across different people, and that's important. That's the key aspect of this metric, because it's individual. So it reflects the individual best effort.
I see. I was thinking of like the power walkers. I remember when that was like a big thing back. I don't see it as much now, but I don't know.
Well, that is actually a great thing. So if you say I'm gonna go for a power walk, your power walk might be faster than mine, but that's okay. Mine is still a power walk. If you know what I mean, it's
Yes.
exactly the. So if you go for a 30 minutes power walk, that's it. That's what you have to do.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Now you also looked at the new cases of cancer and cardiovascular disease. And by the cardiovascular disease, you just mean any kind of heart issues or strokes, basically.
Yeah. We
Okay.
put it we put everything together, because I mean, in terms of numbers, this is always the
Yeah,
difficult thing. I mean,
sure.
even in this data set, which is massive.
Sure.
It's always a problem to look at individually,
Yeah, it's not easy. And so what did you find there, in terms of number of daily steps?
So we found very similar findings. I mean, the optimal number was still like 10,000. So I mean, 10,000 steps was the optimal number across all the outcomes that we looked at. So that's first, and then we found exactly the same, exactly the incremental benefits with each step up until that mark, those 10,000 steps, and then beyond that, not clear benefits or not clear relationship, we could say. Obviously, because of the nature of these two diseases, we found that stronger associations for cardiovascular disease than for cancer, because cancer is a bit more, although some pathways related to cancer might be associated with activity and lifestyles, others not. So, that's why the effect was a bit smaller than for CBD, but still beneficial. Like, for CBD, for example, every 2,000 increment, if I don't remember, was like sort of 40% or no, sorry, 20% of risk reduction of CBD incidence. And for cancer, this was like sort of 7 to 10. So, a bit less, still very meaningful for both diseases.
Yeah, and sometimes I actually was talking to someone yesterday who I interviewed about risk factors for cancer, and we were always saying, like, when we talk about these things that people can do to minimize their risk, we also can't forget about sometimes things are just random or genetics or things happen anyways, no matter what we do. But it's just always something to keep in mind.
Exactly. I mean, I suppose, from now on, these type of studies like mine and others, they will have to include genetic risk as a confounder in their models. And we're doing so already. Actually,
Oh.
we're working on a project right now on steps in people with cancer. And so the outcome would be in people with cancer, can steps reduce the risk of metastasis, new cancer events, or even mortality? And we are taking into
Oh.
account the genetic risk
Interesting.
for
You so you're working on that now.
right now.
That's no, that's really interesting, because I've been every I bring on a lot of researchers and we talk about risk factors, but I'm always in my head, I'm like, well, which risk factor count, counts more, or which mitigating factor counts more, like it's I'm so excited to see more research on that. I know it's hard. I know it's really hard.
It is particularly because, I mean, you will never be able to account for everything and rank
Right.
everything. But if you factor in the genetic risk component, that's a big chunk of
That
the
is,
risk.
you're right. Yeah.
So, we're I suppose, I mean, these other people probably doing similar studies, but we don't saw too. So
No,
hopefully we're doing.
I think that's great. That's
Yeah.
real. Yeah. Well, I'll be excited if you want to come back on to talk about that one when that
Yeah.
one comes out. Can you say that there was an inverse dose-dependent association between daily steps and mortality up to 10,000 steps?
Pretty much. So that means that, the more steps, the better health, the better the health is. So yeah, that's what it means. So you increase the number of steps, you decrease the risk of disease and mortality.
Well, that's good. That's, I mean, because that's something easy for people to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, we talked before about, 10,000 steps being a lot. And in your sample size, it didn't sound like many people got there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why we were discussing before that, finding people with high volumes of physical activity or steps in this case is very difficult. So this is a major call as well for public agencies and healthcare providers and everyone really involved in health promotion and physical activity promotion. We need to do better. And it's not like, because sometimes we blame the individual, and this is even the case for obesity, when the individual is to be blamed for what it's to be blamed, but not for the full pie of guiltiness. So there's these policies that we could do better to improve the lifestyle that is social. The environment is very important. It's not the same to be in surrounded by a beautiful walkable path near the beach than being in a street with no lights, dangerous street, so it's obviously not the same. So we need to do better in at many layers of determinants of steps and activity in general.
Yeah. No, you're right. We have to build the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't, especially in like areas, that need it the most.
Yep.
I just wanted to add, every study has limitations. I'm working on a study right now that's going to have a ton of limitations are going to be longer than anything else. But how did you account for reverse causation?
Best we could. But it's still there probably. So we did a few things. So first of all, we excluded at the beginning people that were sick essentially. So those with prevalent like CVD, cancer, or any other disease that might have interfered in the association between walking and disease and mortality. So that was first. Then the second thing that we did was left truncations, essentially, removing people with the event of interest within the first 2 years of follow-ups. So we've got baseline measurements of activity, so walking, and then we follow up people for seven years. If a person, had the disease within the first 2 years, we will have removed that person, because it's very likely that he or she was sick already, so there was nothing to do in that case with physical activity or with the steps.
Right. My last question here, this is a kind of like an open-ended question, but just based on your research work, with lifestyle changes, risk factors, that kind of thing, your experience, what advice would you give, maybe at the population level, from a public health perspective, like what we can do better to get people healthier?
Well, I would say, there's different things that we can do, capitalizing on the every step count, if you want. We can have healthcare providers spending like a few minutes talking about these or the similar studies, saying, hey, look, with every single step, with increasing even a little your movement, you can improve your health. That cost nothing in terms of time and might be a big help for that particular person. At government level, I would say, invest more money in infrastructure, as you say, because that will make a difference, particularly for the most deprived areas, because those are the people, coming from lower social economical backgrounds that need it the most. We find a lot of health inequalities, right? That are explained by, the level of the money or the poverty levels or, So maybe by investing in promoting lifestyle, healthier lifestyle with more infrastructure, with more advice, with other motivation tools, we can reduce even these health inequalities. So it is a cheap, I would say, very cheap solutions for governments to reduce health inequalities and make the life better for everyone.
I totally agree. It's so funny because it's so easy to talk about these things and it would be such a cost-effective investment. Indeed. Yeah, and then we don't ever do it. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how you have to push it has to come from the governments, I don't know. There's like so much, there's like a block of inertia there. just even safer bike lanes would be a start. But
exactly.
There we are. Anyways, thank you so much. This was really interesting. I'm sure my listeners are going to really love it. And like I said, it was something that they requested. So thank you so much for your time. And definitely stay in touch, because I'm very curious about the type of research you're working on right now.
That's good. Thanks for having me. It was a really pleasant time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Enjoy your night, afternoon.
Yeah, afternoon.
Afternoon in Spain. The rest of your afternoon there. Thank you again.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, gang. Thanks so much for joining in. If you can, like, share, leave a review. I sincerely appreciate it. For any topic ideas, you can email me. My email is erin@bloomingwellness.com. For upcoming guests, you could just check that. You'll get that in my newsletter. To subscribe to that, just go to bloomingwellness.com. I think it's supposed to pop up or something. Like, pop up, subscribe. Okay, and now it's quote time. Quote time. Last time I went with a really long quote. I was, like, all quote motivated or something. On a quote bandwagon. This time I'm going to do a short one. And this quote is from the esteemed Cheshire Cat in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which is a masterpiece. Lewis Carroll is a genius. All right, here it is. Every adventure requires a first step. That's it, because it's fitting, because it's talking about steps. All right, guys, thanks for joining in, and I hope to see you here next time. Have a good one. Bye-bye.